You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Parrott. Coming up today at 6 on 1A Plus is the weekly roundup of world news, from violence in the West Bank to U.S. Navy incident with Iran. Catch up on the latest from around the globe today at 6 on 1A Plus. Now, Governor Tony Evers signed Wisconsin's new two-year budget into law earlier this week with some key vetoes in the mix. The Republican majority in the legislature had sent their final budget plan to the governor's office. He made some big changes, especially when it comes to income taxes and education funding. We're digging into the new budget and what it means for you, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about what got funded, what didn't, the kind of changes to taxes and education funding? If you've been following this, are you happy with the outcome of this state budget? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Mark Sommerhauser is the Communications Director for the Wisconsin Policy Forum. Mark, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me, Rob. It's great to be with you again.
Well, Governor Evers signed this budget and line item vetoed certain things rather than sending the whole thing back. Here is the governor talking to WPR's The Morning Show about that this morning.
The Democrats did not like the budget as is, and neither did I, and that's why I made significant changes to the budget to make it more palatable. In turn, it was really important. We had some really important things in the budget that I did support around affordable housing, PFAS, taking care of PFAS for the first time, and actually having money to do that. Obviously, the work that we did in shared revenue to get money to our counties and municipalities, and also, frankly, pay increases for correctional folks and people that work in the juvenile or in the justice system. And so we had lots of wins in that budget, and I felt what we could do with the budget as it relates to what was accomplished, but also what we could do with vetoes made it doable for me.
Mark, before we get into specific line items, let's talk about the Wisconsin governor's veto power used expansively and creatively over the decades, this time around no exception. Can you talk about how this line item veto can really change things in the budget?
Yeah, so there's no question, I don't think, and I don't think anybody would dispute that our state constitution here in Wisconsin gives our governor a type of veto authority that is pretty unique and much more expansive and powerful than what most governors have. It is sometimes referred to as a line item veto. I guess my view would be the better terminology would be a partial veto. What it really enables the governor to do in Wisconsin is with a budget or any bill that deals with appropriations, you know, he is able to cross out numbers. He's able to cross out words, whole sentences, and what that within the actual written text of the legislation that is passed and sent to his desk. And so that is really gives him an extraordinary power to be able to reshape budgets. It's a power that, of course, also previous Wisconsin governors have had and have wielded in quite creative ways. But it also creates this possibility for some sort of surprises and some sort of curveballs that can emerge from the use of that partial veto authority. And I would say that's what we saw again with this budget from Governor Evers.
Let's check out income taxes. We've had a bunch of permutations. Now, Governor Evers had one plan in his original budget focused on middle-class tax cuts. He made the case. A Senate Republican leadership said, hey, how about a flat tax here in Wisconsin? Assembly Republicans said, no, let's reshape the way our taxes work, cut them across the board, including at the higher ends. That's what ended up going to the governor. The governor made another change. Where did we end up on income taxes?
Yeah, there was a lot to keep track of. It was definitely not easy to keep track of all the different competing plans. As you said, the governor kind of had a proposal for basically across the board tax credit. That did not go anywhere in the legislature. The legislature, in particular the state Senate, wanted to shift to a flat tax. But as you said, not all lawmakers were on board with that. What we ended up with, as you mentioned, what was sent to the governor was a budget that did give income tax cuts to all different income groups of Wisconsinites. But certainly there's no question that the vast majority of that tax relief was going to folks at the higher earning end of the income spectrum. the budget, again, the bill that went to the governor would have reduced the tax rates for all four of the state's income tax brackets, more so at the higher income levels, the third and the fourth, so the second highest and the highest income brackets. What the governor actually did here was he went ahead and he left in place the rate reductions for the two lowest brackets. So that's going to affect all income that everyone with income tax liability earns and pays taxes on up to $34,000 a year. Those rate reductions were left in place, and those taxable income up to $34,000 will see a lower rate paid under this new budget. However, what the big change the governor made here was to use his partial veto authority to strike the rate reductions to the third and fourth brackets. So the third bracket being from about $34,000 to about $375,000. So quite a large range of income there. That's the third bracket, and then the fourth and highest bracket is basically $375,000 and higher in annual adjusted gross income. So again, the legislature wanted to reduce rates on those income levels. The governor's partial veto struck those reductions and will leave those rates as they previously had been. And so that's a big, very big change in the income tax cut as the legislature had envisioned it. We can talk about kind of, what the implications are of that, but a very big change.
Yeah, and graduated tax rates can be funky to talk about. If I have this right, Mark, if somebody is making $34,000 a year, all of their income is affected by that rate change. If somebody's making $100,000 a year, they still get a taste of that. The first $34,000 is under that lower rate. Anything above that, same old rate. Do I have that right? Because I get confused.
That's exactly right. Yeah, it's very easy to get tripped up on that, but no, you have that exactly right.
We are talking about the new state budget signed into law by Governor Evers with some partial vetoes. Mark Sommerhauser is with us from the Wisconsin Policy Forum. You can join in with your thoughts, your reactions, maybe your questions at 800-642-1234. What do you think of what you've heard about the long saga of what happens to income tax in Wisconsin? Did you want bigger, more dramatic changes? Are you happy where we ended up? How about education funding? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Before we move on from those taxes, Mark, I mean, part of the deal is we have this budget surplus, one-time budget surplus in Wisconsin. And the question was, do we increase spending a lot? Do we decrease taxes a lot? How much of a hit on that surplus does this income tax deal end up making?
Yeah, so that's a great question. I think that's one of the biggest things that the forum, our organization, the Wisconsin Policy Forum, is always kind of looking at. We're a nonpartisan organization. We don't advocate for particular positions, but we do, I think, from time to time, want to emphasize the importance, whether it's state government, whether it's local government or any level of government, the importance of having enough money in reserve so that, if there is things like a recession, unexpected events that might occur, that government has the resources to be able to respond to that without necessarily having to do big tax increases or things like that. There's no question that this budget was really unique because oftentimes going into a budget cycle, there's a budget deficit that lawmakers and the governor have to grapple with. What do we cut? Do we increase taxes to be able to address a budget deficit? But this time around, due to a number of factors coming out of the pandemic, the amount of federal aid that we got from the federal government during the pandemic, a lot of economic growth, inflation certainly played a role in this as well. The state had a very large budget surplus, about $8.8 billion, which is really a historic budget surplus, the largest that we've had in decades. And we actually did do a very quick calculation actually just today. This is, of course, when you're projecting particularly state revenues out 2 years in the future, I would just urge the caveat that, particularly the revenue projections over a two-year period are very volatile and can absolutely change quite a bit. But based on the current projections, the state would still have, looks like, more than $5 billion in total reserves at the end of this new biennium. So that would be at the end of June 2025, if these current revenue and spending projections hold over a two-year period. They might not, but That's just based on the best numbers that we have right now. So that's still quite a large amount. As you can see, it's less than $8.8 billion, but it's still quite a large amount. It would be nearly a quarter of state spending in a given fiscal year for that fiscal year, which is much higher than the state has typically carried in reserve. Again, it's sort of a Goldilocks situation. You don't want to be too low or too high. You kind of want to be just right. We will see. I think it's possible that the governor and the legislature could enter into negotiations about doing more additional tax cuts or additional spending. But if they don't agree to any more tax cuts or additional spending, that's kind of the projection of how much we would have in reserve at the end of this budget.
Talking to Mark Sommerhauser, Communications Director for the Wisconsin Policy Forum, about Wisconsin's new two-year state budget. You can join in at 800-642-1234. We've been talking taxes. Coming up, education funding. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. We continue our talk with Mark Sommerhauser, Communications Director for the Wisconsin Policy Forum, looking at the new two-year state budget just signed with some key vetoes by Governor Evers. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about the budget, how that veto process works, what came out in terms of taxes, education funding, and more? Join in at 800-642-1234. Let's bring out a caller now. Gene is with us in Wauwatosa. Gene, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you want to bring up, Gene?
Well, I'm an educator in the greater Milwaukee area, and I'm really thankful for the leadership my school presented with this education funding gap and the business leaders in the greater Milwaukee area also were part of this. So just wanted to give a shout out to them. And I do have a question. Is there a way the Republicans can reverse Governor Evers' partial line item veto?
Gene, thanks for the call. Let's start with that question first, and then we'll get into education funding, Mark. It is possible to override a veto. The odds, given the makeup right now, don't look high, though.
I think that's right, Rob. So basically, there is a mechanism to override any of these partial vetoes. And the mechanism would be that there would need to be a supermajority, two-thirds vote in both houses of both the state assembly and the state senate to override any veto. So that's something that the legislature can do if it has the votes to do that. There is currently a Republican supermajority, a two-thirds supermajority in the state senate. However, there is not currently a Republican supermajority in the assembly. I believe they're two seats shy of that. So I would say that it's unlikely, not impossible, but unlikely that you would see Democrats breaking ranks with their party to override Governor Evers' vetoes on this budget.
And then Gene took us to education funding. There's a lot in this budget related to education. Now, we saw this line item veto. There were some property tax changes locked in for the next couple of years. The governor used that partial veto to extend that to 400 years. That's not that big a deal because, of course, we're going to be back in a new budget process in 2 years. What do you see coming out of education funding here, Mark?
Yeah, so a lot going on here, and education funding is always a complex topic, even for wonky people like myself. So I'll try to explain this in a way that's simplified, but obviously is still accurate. Basically, the state, since the 1990s, has had something called revenue limits for school districts. And what that means is that the state, under state law, limits each school district on a per pupil basis on the amount of revenue that each district can take in from its two principal sources of revenue, which are its local property tax levy, plus state general school aids, which are the bulk of, not all, but most of the aids that each school district gets from the state. That revenue limit is different for each school district, but just to give you kind of an example, the average revenue limit statewide in the last school year was a little under $12,000, about $11,888 per student. And so these revenue limits are obviously really important from a budgeting standpoint for each school district to know how much money they're going to be able to take in each year to put toward their budget. And the state lawmakers and the governor revisit those revenue limits every 2 years as part of the budget process, when they can either you know, in theory, they could decrease them. That doesn't happen often, but it has happened. They can hold them flat, which they did in this last budget in 2021, 2 years ago, or they can increase them. And so basically what happened with the budget that, you know, the legislature sent to the governor was they did increase revenue limits for school districts by $325, both in the first year of the budget and then an additional $325 more in the second year of the budget. That's an increase that it's significant. It's about works out to about 2.7% annually. So it's, you know, at the current rate of inflation, still below the rate of inflation, but, you know, it is certainly much bigger than, you know, during the previous budget, we had no increase in those revenue limits. So where the governor's partial veto powers kind of came in is, again, you know, as we mentioned at the outset, he has this unusual ability to be able to cross out numbers, words, punctuation, whole sentences to kind of rewrite the text of the legislation. In this case, he used it in a pretty novel way, and he was able to cross out numbers and punctuation in the text of the budget bill so that those $325 annual revenue limit increases, as they were originally written, were just for the next two school years. But under the governor's partial veto, he was actually able to extend them until the year 24-25. So another 402 years of $325 increases each year. So that's kind of what a lot of folks may have been reading about if you were seeing the headlines on Wednesday about the governor's vetoes. Now, a few caveats that need to be made there. Nothing actually binds any actions of the legislature for 402 years. Any legislature and governor in any future year can change that law. And revenue limits, again, get addressed basically every 2 years. So you can't really lock in anything for 400 years. But it does say that until another law would be passed to the contrary, you would have these sort of built-in annual increases in revenue limits of $325 each year. And that's certainly a very significant change.
Thanks for the call, Gene. Talking about the state budget with Mark Sommerhauser from the Wisconsin Policy Forum. Mike joins us now in Southeast Wisconsin. Mike, hi.
Hello, sir. I just kind of have a question of if the roads aren't fixed and big potholes and the buses break down, how are the kids going to get to school?
Mike, thanks a lot for the call. Mark, it seems like a road budget was more controversial in past budgets, but it was here. What kind of things do we see when it came to roads and infrastructure?
Yeah, so I think that's fair, Rob. The transportation budget was not quite as much of a hot button issue this time around. Part of the issue is one of the previous budget cycles here, there was a debate about increasing fees for transportation. That's always one of the hot button transportation issues. That was not something that came up this time around. There was really no discussion about increasing, vehicle fees or gas taxes or anything like that. There was a pretty major shift, though, in the transportation budget this year. It was more of a continuation of a trend that we had previously seen, but to an even greater degree in this budget. We have kind of seen a long-term trend, both in Wisconsin and nationally, where as cars get much more fuel efficient, some cars now are hybrid, or even, you know, some electric vehicles that don't use any, you know, gas fuel, and their owners don't pay any fuel taxes at all. We have seen a stagnation and even a decline in the amount of money that government has been collecting from fuel tax revenues. And so as a consequence of that, you know, policymakers in Wisconsin and elsewhere have pretty consciously made the decision to start shifting road and bridge and transit funding away from some of those user fees like gas taxes. And that's kind of what did happen in this budget that the governor just signed. We saw quite a bit more funding come from the state's general fund that is now going to go toward roads and bridges and transit. So that was a pretty major shift, and it may seem a bit abstract, but it is significant. It's always controversial in some quarters when you're pulling money from the general fund. You know, previously transportation had been largely self-sustaining until a few years ago when this trend kind of started of lawmakers putting more and more money from the general fund toward transportation projects. And that trend really did, I would say, not just continue, but accelerated in this budget.
Thanks for that call, Mike. Just in our last minute, Mark, carry this forward now. What loose ends are you watching to see if lawmakers and the governor try to pick them up? You've touched on a couple briefly. What else is out there?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And I think that oftentimes in the state budget process, when the governor signs a budget, that oftentimes kind of marks the end of the process. This time around, I'm not certain of that, just because, you know, the governor has been very vocal that in his use of the veto, in particular, to really dramatically pare back the income tax cut that the legislature sent him, that leaves a lot of money still in reserve, as we mentioned. The state still is going to have a lot of money in the bank. And so the governor has really signaled that he's quite open to coming back to the table with lawmakers to talk about potentially an additional sort of deal on the budget that might potentially provide more tax relief. That would presumably be what lawmakers especially would be wanting, although the governor also has proposed additional tax relief. But then the governor also has signaled that, you know, as part of such a deal, he might be interested in getting some additional funding for some of his priorities that he feels like were not sufficiently addressed in the budget that he just signed. A couple examples of that would be child care funding. There was quite a bit of federal aid that was used to kind of support our state's child care system during the pandemic that now is running out. And the governor has wanted to put some state money towards supporting child care providers. I know another big priority of the administration is funding for the University of Wisconsin system. State funding for the UW system was cut in this budget, which the governor signaled he was very unhappy about. And so I know that that's an area that he would potentially also like to negotiate with lawmakers about.
And we'll leave it there. Thanks to our guest, Mark Sommerhauser, Communications Director at the Wisconsin Policy Forum. He joined us for a look at the new two-year budget. Coming up Monday on Central Time, the Supreme Court issued a ruling that lets certain service providers refuse to do business with same-sex couples. Find out what went into that case and what it's going to mean. That and more coming up Monday here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up on Food Friday, we'll learn the best ways to make barbecue chicken for your next backyard cookout with the help of Barbecue Hall of Famer and friend of Central Time, Meathead. First, the latest data from the State Department of Health Services says infant mortality rates among African Americans are more than double the state average. The department is also now seeking public input on how to spend a nearly $15 million settlement from e-cigarette manufacturer Juul Labs. We have the DHS secretary designee with us for a look at those issues, along with health advisories, budget reaction, and the state of the opioid epidemic here in the state. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have for the Health Services Department chief? How should the state spend its resources to lower infant mortality? Have you seen the impact of the opioid epidemic in your own community? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Kirsten Johnson heads the State Department of Health Services. Secretary Johnson, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you, Rob. Thank you for having me.
It's been just about 5 months now since Governor Evers appointed you to head that agency. What are your impressions now that the early days are past you?
That's a great question. I'm going to say that it's still early days. DHS is a very large agency, and you know, I've spent the last few months really learning sort of the depth and the breadth of our work. Certainly, we've been deep into the budget negotiations, and you know, it's been really fascinating. But I think my first impressions really are that there's a tremendous team of smart and really dedicated staff at DHS who are doing just great work to keep Wisconsinites healthy.
Let's do a little civics 101. What does DHS do? What's the scope of the job there?
That's a great question, too. So a number of things. We have the Division of Public Health. So pre-pandemic, I think many people didn't know what public health did or where public health lived. But, you know, we have local public health departments across the state and counties and cities and municipalities. But DHS also has this Division of Public Health that works closely with those health departments. We also have the Division of Medicaid Services, so that's Medicaid. All of Medicaid lives within DHS. We also have DCPS, which really is focused on behavioral health, and we have 7 different facilities across the state to help stabilize people who may be in crisis. And then we also have DQA, which is quality assurance for nursing home, long-term care, assisted livings, et cetera. So it's a very large agency. And then in addition, we have our own legal counsel team. We have the Office of Inspector General to really look into fraud and abuse in many of our in programs that are operated out of DHS. But it's a very large agency. It's 6,400 staff.
Talking to Kirsten Johnson, Secretary-Designee of the State Department of Health Services. You can join in with your questions about health and public health issues in Wisconsin at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Secretary Johnson, let's focus in now on some different aspects of health issues here in Wisconsin. I mentioned we had that DHS report on infant mortality rates, a big disparity, especially facing African Americans. Can you talk about what the DHS report found and what's driving some of those differences when it comes to infant mortality?
No, absolutely. This report wasn't surprising for any of us who've been working in this space for a long time. You know, and having come from the city of Milwaukee as a health commissioner, I know this data well, and it is really heartbreaking. But I think there are a number of factors that contribute: lack of access to care, disinvestment in our Black and Brown communities throughout the state. Pre-existing and chronic disease and racism and how it drives stress and the impact that it has on women during childbearing and when they're pregnant. So there's a number of factors that drive our really significant disparities around infant mortality in Wisconsin.
There are a lot of pieces to that puzzle. From the perspective of the state's Department of Health Services, what are some of your priorities to help tackle this problem?
Well, I think one of the things I was really excited about to see in the budget and hopeful was going to be included and was actually then cut was the postpartum coverage for Medicaid-eligible mothers for a full 12 months after delivery. It's currently 60 days in Wisconsin, where over 40 states have implemented or plan to implement in the coming months the full 12-month coverage. And again, it was introduced in the budget and was cut out. I'm very hopeful that it will be going to be introduced as a bill and will pass the legislature. It has bipartisan support. I think that's the first step to getting women the coverage and access to care that they need and that really sort of vulnerable time in their lives after giving birth.
Let's stay with that state budget for a minute. What are some other things that you were happy to see make it through, items on your wish or hope list maybe that didn't come through that you're hoping for future action on?
Sure. So I think, overall, there were some great wins. Thinking about investments in safety net programs like Food Share, the increase in Medicaid reimbursement for our healthcare providers and healthcare partners and nursing homes, improving access to mental health and behavioral health care, investments in the healthcare workforce. I think those are all real wins and very meaningful for access to care in the state of Wisconsin. I think, again, like I mentioned, the lack of extension of postpartum coverage for Medicaid-eligible mothers. I think the other, which is sort of, we all know this, but the lack of expansion of Medicaid, which left $1.6 billion in state savings on the table.
Let's focus in on the workforce end of things. We've had conversations here on Central Time over the years about, not enough nurses to do things like home care, nursing home care, things like that, all the way to specialties not available, especially in rural parts of the state. What are some of your priorities when making sure that there are people to do the healthcare jobs that people need around the state?
Yeah, that's a good question. We've had many conversations internally and with many stakeholders about, we can't make more people. So how do we incentivize the existing workforce to stay in the healthcare workforce? How do we potentially bring people back who may have left over the course of the pandemic? And then how do we engage our young people and make the healthcare workforce something that they're interested in doing? We're looking at how do we increase base rates of pay? How do we potentially, we have a number of pilot projects that exist out there right now with long-term care facilities. One, for example, which is paying people 5 days of for 5 days of work, but only working for 4 days. So again, trying to be creative in ways that we can encourage people to stay and come into the healthcare workforce. But it is absolutely a need, and especially with our aging workforce or our aging population in Wisconsin.
Shifting to public health here. Now, one problem that I don't think anybody necessarily saw coming was having to have a public health reaction to wildfire smoke in Wisconsin, multiple days of public health advisories for ozone or particulate matter. Can you talk about the state response to that?
I can. You know, we like everyone, we've known about the wildfires that were happening in Canada. And, you know, part of this is just climate change and recognizing the vulnerability that we all are sitting in this space. But, you know, certainly when the smoke came in, I live in Milwaukee, you know, it's particularly thick early in the week here, working with the health departments, working internally with our comms team to figure out how do we message to people to stay inside. And if they do go outside, to mask. You know, lots of kids are in camps and are outdoors. So how do we work with, you know, all of our community partners and organizations that are working with our most vulnerable aging population, anyone who may have breathing issues? How do we assure that people have the information and access to the resources they need, like masks to wear outside? And unfortunately, I think this is something we're going to experience. I continue to experience over the course of this summer and future summers. So how do we address this long term is one of the questions we're asking ourselves.
Talking to Kirsten Johnson, Secretary Designee of the State Department of Health Services. She's with us for a look at a number of public health issues facing Wisconsin. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts on the issues we've already been talking about. If you work in healthcare, are there challenges getting enough people to work where you work in healthcare? Do you have thoughts on how you could bring more people in as either as CNAs or doctors or specialists in your community? Do you have trouble finding the kind of care you need in your part of the state? What would help you in future outbreaks of wildfire smoke here in Wisconsin? Let us know what you saw in your neck of the woods. And coming up, we're going to get a look at state efforts on the opioid epidemic and fentanyl in the state. Want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. How is this affecting your community? Has it touched your family? If you work as a first responder or in healthcare, love to hear your perspective on the opioid epidemic here in the state. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time.